Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we have a subject that I know so many of you are going to identify with. It's shaking the globe. Now you'll say, Donna, that could mean a lot of things, a lot of different things to many different people, and you are correct. But my guest today, Blythe McGarvey, has spent quite a while in compiling facts and information regarding the international marketplace that we are evolving through at this time that's creating so much change. It's absolutely amazing, and Shaking Up the Globe is a very good title for a book that addresses international perspectives that so many people are afraid to touch, but not Blythe. Blythe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you're in Williamsburg, Virginia. You're the Chief Executive Officer of Leadership for International Finance. Now, that's really a mouthful. You work with clients on, you know, short-term objectives, long-term objectives, and you've been a director on the boards of Accenture, Pepsi Bottling Company, the Travelers Company, Viacom, and Wawa, as I'll call it. This is a topic that is so hot. Just minutes before I came on the air, I was listening to someone talking about various aspects that we're dealing with the military, and it just, I happened to be going by a television set, and there was all of this conversation going on, and I thought, our world is in such a major transformation. Economics with China in big trouble. They thought they had it made. They spent billions on the Olympic Games, all of these things, and now they're laying off perhaps a billion people. Who knows? I mean, their economics are really hurting. We've got stuff going on in the United States. We have got a big, big shakeup, and this is not a joke because it's causing a tsunami, a financial tsunami that is causing a lot of people to say, is there a mountain we can run to? What can we do? Why did you feel compelled that you had to put together this information? Now, I know you're in with international finance, but boy, you were busy. You didn't have to be bothered doing this.
Well, Donna, you're right. And you can call my company Life Group, L-I-F.
Okay.
Because I'm the CEO of Life and everybody is, but I felt that 6 years ago when I founded the company and I have 8 affiliates, we said we wanted to really make a difference in helping others and spread some of our functional expertise. Mine happens to be finance. But I felt a need to talk about this interconnected world because as I traveled and gave speeches, I realized most people understood how to fit in and stand out as an important leadership skill. But they say, but how do I become a global citizen? You know, I'm worried about my own backyard. Why should I be worried about the rest of the world? And I think a lot of us now see how interconnected we were, but the first part of the book, I really explained, you know, just how dependent we really were on one another. That without China's 11% GDP growth for the last 5 years, we would not have enjoyed the health that we did in our economy. And it's so compelling to me that we have to be able to tear down the walls, just as Reagan told Gorbachev. We have to tear down the walls to share our climate, our resources, both physical, human, and financial. And that was important to me.
I agree with you. I think it's absolutely paramount. We're watching a lot of institutions crash and burn, not just in the United States, around the globe. This is nothing new. Before we went on air, I said, if you look at history, there have been major shakeups, but in our generation, in our time frame, they're happening a lot faster.
Yeah.
We're not traveling on sailing ships across the water, thank you very much. We're communicating instantaneously, and anymore, if any of us have any glitches, which I have experienced, with our computers, we get really bent out of shape. We go, wait a minute, what's wrong with us? Well, this is brand new, but look at how we've adapted to this. Look at the technology. We don't think twice about cell phones. People are texting all over the place. Why is it so hard with the adaptation we have made with technology that there is such an obstinacy in shifting direction with the financial perspectives? Is it because we've been so hardwired with a particular kind of thinking that to burn out that hardwiring is going to take some real trauma first?
It's interesting you use the word hardwiring. I think you've hit us something very important. Human beings like to deal with what is comfortable. We all know about the path of least resistance. And as I did a lot of my research, it's even surprised me that we forget about the possibilities that are outside of our close world. I mean, there are some people who only focus on their city block in some cities. Some people who never go into the downtown area of their city. Some people who never leave their state. Some people who never leave their country. So I think we're hardwired, to use your word, to really stay with what's most comfortable. And I wrote this book because I really think there are six, I call them stops or factors that people need to understand and think about in order to become more comfortable with foreign cultures. And I use that word foreign a little loosely because Robert Louis Stevenson said, there is no one really foreign except the traveler. So that when you go to another country, I had to deal a lot with Australia and Japan in the early 90s. And I remember learning from my colleagues there that when they moved to those countries from the United States, they had to take the initiative to stay in touch with the people back in the home city in the U.S. because they were now out of the picture. And they had to take the opportunities to try and share and bring what they were learning back to the home country and to the home location.
That's amazing. You mentioned 6 points, and you have, I may be reading the wrong ones, but correct me if I am. You said it's not to hunker down and erect defensive barriers. We've got to take action. We need to, just as you said, collaborate. But they said there are 6 considerations to help our thinking as
right.
Westerners. One is non-Western cultural norms, particularly in China, India, and other emerging markets. We need to be aware of these. 2, the technological and other skills of Generation Y.
Right.
3,
that's a second.
Women as a labor resource. 4, the continuing role of shareholder interests. 5, the expanding role and changes to capitalism in creating entrepreneurs. And 6, the convergence of values stemming from the growth of democracy. Let's take the, we've touched a little bit on what people have experienced in Australia, you know, and keeping in touch here. Let's address the issue of women. And some of you say, oh, Donna, why do you just focus on the women? Because women in most cultures throughout the world, I mean, it's only been recently in the United States that women have evolved more in intently and with purpose to become a part of business in the United States. But around the world, most women are not literate, which is very interesting to me because it's sometimes their culture just doesn't support that. But you have in Bangladesh the big change where women have been encouraged to develop businesses by the Greenbaum Bank. You have all of these various movements that are going on in different places, and women are a phenomenal resource.
Absolutely. First of all, I want to congratulate you for getting the 6 key points. You really did your homework and understood the book, and so I appreciate that. Let's talk about education since you raised that. The returns to education by gender, in my research I found this from the World Bank, a paper that was published in 2002, that the returns for investing in education, in women's education, is much higher than in men's education, particularly in these countries that are growing. I'll give you an example. They were looking at what were the returns, in other words, the investment, the cost, and then how much they contributed to the GDP. And in Brazil, women were at 15%, men slightly less. China, you know, they're at like 8% return for the cost of the education. Men were less. Same with Mexico. Singapore was dramatic. Russia was dramatic. Every country except India, and I don't really understand why India, could be cultural norms keeping them back. But investing in education in women had a greater return. And the reason for that is that you not only get women who are equipped for the modern economy and bring a new talent to the skills that are needed in these developing countries and our whole future economic trends, but you also are improving generations because it's the women that are raising the children and able to adapt. So it was fascinating that there really are data points and research to back up why you want to invest in women for so they can work.
I agree. And it is known that if in a family education is not valued, typically there is an attitude and action that supports the attitude that you're not worthy of going on any further. There are so many issues that come in, and it is amazing how that sabotages the wellness of the economic environment. I was so pleased to see on, I think it was PBS, they have a program that kids put together to teach each other how to work with money. And when I saw this, I thought, whoever put this together is really savvy. It's just like junior achievement. These particular groups that they haven't had a whole bunch of recognition or support, but all of these things, when the business community can be involved in the educational process and can support the education of women, like you said, it ripples down. It goes down into the kids. The women have the self-esteem, and they'll say, you must get the education. You must know how to read. How are you going to know how to negotiate a contract or be able to understand a bit about a history? It opens up a world, and it saddens me that we are seeing a diminishment of the interest in supporting that in many areas of the United States. It has really been amazing to me.
Well, it is interesting because I really looked at it within the U.S. and outside the U.S., and there is what's called the Dakar Framework, the Education for All by 2015 initiative. And when you look at the midterm monitoring report of that, it actually showed that educating girls and women lead to higher wages for both men and women. Mm-hmm. Isn't that fascinating?
Yes, it is.
And there's a greater likelihood of working outside the home, lower fertility, and that means reduced maternal and child mortality, and there's better health and education. So if you think about that whole productivity loop, and the midterm report showed, we were talking about reading, it showed that the number of out-of-school children declined from 96 million in 1999 to 72 million in 2005. Now, you might say, well, gosh, that's still a lot of out-of-school children who are being forced to work and not go to school. But that is an incredible leap of improvement of the world economy by mm-hmm. educating women and having the focus on that.
Yes, and again, it's beneficial on all levels. When you think when people have the opportunity for education, I'm not talking about brainwashing.
Right.
I'm not talking about education so that they know there are variables out there, so that they know that they have choices, that they can think, that they can reason, and they're challenged in that way, then you're definitely going to have an improvement. And I liked the comment that you had in here that the 21st century will no longer be an age of empires or even one of the lone economic superpowers. When you look at history, in recorded history, we've had maybe Egypt at one time that was a superpower, Holland at another time was a superpower, France, England, Spain, the United States, Germany, you know, South America at one point. You have all of these things, and when you go through and you study history, you look at it and you go, wow, you know, I guess this is the way it's supposed to go. No, it's not.
Well, and you know, it is interesting because think back to Rosie the Riveter. You were talking about the U.S., that was an image that appeared in May of 1943, and women in the U.S. really were able to enter the U.S. workforce during that World War II and doubled the number of women who were employed before the war in 1940. That seems like ancient history to a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, but it was a way to actually experience women in a new vision.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned how the Dutch were once a world power. I once talked with a lawyer who was Dutch working in a Paris office, our Paris office, and I said, why don't you work in the Netherlands? She said, there are less women working per capita in the Netherlands than in Turkey. And I went and I found the statistics, and she was exactly right.
That's amazing.
Well, and think about it, Donna. The reason for that is in both world wars, the Dutch, unfortunately, were run over before they had a chance to fight in the war. So they were basically held captive and did not have the social changes that came with fighting their enemy. And whereas Turkey, 1917, that Ataturk just decided we're going to become a secular nation, we're going to have women to read, we're going to have women working, we're going to get rid of the fez, we're not going to be the Muslim country that we used to be, we're going to look forward, not backwards. And it is amazing because most people would not know that unless you live there and work there.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in Holland for a while, and most of the women that I saw, this was in the early 90s, were the secretaries or pouring tea.
Mm-hmm. As it was in the United States.
It was.
Yes.
But the difference between those countries is in the U.S., a new vision was created. And then Betty Friedan's book in 1960s opened
mm-hmm.
the doors to opportunity.
Mm-hmm. It is something that sometimes it just takes a little pebble being dropped in the pond of insight and awareness, and then it ripples out. But it takes also the activism. But it takes a relearning.
A relearning.
Undoing the hard wire and looking at things differently. I'll give you a silly example, and this is relating to men. My husband, when he was working for a major insurance company, he was fired because he had a mustache.
Five years later,
it was okay.
Right.
And that's so ridiculous. But it's the mentality that we incorporate in as absolute.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because I lay out three myths in the woman working chapter. And I basically show that women have to convince decision makers to ignore these three myths about sending the women abroad. Myth number one, women do not want to become international managers.
Oh, that's a farce. That's not true at all.
Exactly. 97% of those women succeeded in their assignments regardless of the country, which is tremendous. Myth number two, companies refuse to send women abroad. They think they're protecting women, and that's not true. And myth number three, foreigners' prejudice against women renders women ineffective. Quite frankly, when I've been working in different countries, and let's use Japan, which is a dramatic example, I was actually on more equal footing as a woman as an American woman as an American man would be, because the Japanese both considered us, and they called us guailos, which means foreign devils.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
So if anything, I was a bit more sensitive to some of their cultural norms and their values so that I could address some of the issues, because I was, let's just say, enlightened in a manner that perhaps a man wouldn't have been.
I think that is very good. And I think the men that are savvy, I had a very dear friend a number of years ago who became involved in a major industry. She was considered the only woman, in fact, that was hired for this job. And she was in the top echelon of executive positioning. And it was very difficult for her to understand, and we had long conversations about this, that the men she was working for, they looked at her as an equal.
Exactly.
She was a very gifted woman, and she said she was stuck in her own little patterning of, oh, wow, they look at me differently. No. The truth was, when she was in that positioning, they looked at her and respected her, one, for her thinking capacity, two, for her innovation, and three, for her capacity to be able to communicate even more effectively, being a woman, that was one of her greatest skills, than they were capable of doing. With her present in meetings, there was an ease and an openness. And it was just something that absolutely amazed her. And I can remember our having long conversations about this. I said, you've got to get over this stuff in your head.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get past it. Let's talk about entrepreneurs for a moment.
I love talking about entrepreneurs.
Oh, so do I. Because I just, being one and just knowing so many people, you know, that have been successful and failed. I mean, I think this is wonderful. This is a global issue today. Right now, we are in a situation where we hear so many people working from a positioning of fear. And to me, this is a positioning of opportunity. Here in the state of Washington, I was listening when I was out taking care of business today, where we are having, with Microsoft, first time in 35 years, they're having major layoffs. We have Boeing that has had major layoffs. A lot of Boeing's work went overseas in 1995. They took it offshore. A lot of jobs were lost from that. So many businesses in this country have sent stuff out of the country. We have lost millions of jobs because people said it's more economic to work out of the country. This, they're finding, is coming back to bite them in a way. But this gives an opportunity to the entrepreneurs to say, what can we do? Because we do have a changing economy. Our world is different. And it's not just high tech. But what can we do to provide service? How can we do it efficiently and economically? What can we do with our concepts and ideas? Entrepreneurs are needed. They are going to make it. We're not going to lose them. What would you say to the entrepreneurs today, not just in the United States, but worldwide?
Well, I mean, there's a lot to be said, but I would say the first thing is a leader who wants to be an entrepreneur makes the most out of the resources they're given. And in today's troubled economy, that is a huge asset to be able to make the most of the resources you are given. I think as I reflect about the most important thing about an entrepreneur is know what your customer wants. And you can find that out by thinking and doing research about improving your own service or your own product. I'll give you an example. When the auto companies were asking for a bailout earlier this year, and people said, oh, no, we have to keep the auto companies. I said, you know what? What will happen is that we'll just delay their restructuring. And it's, right. It's always sad when you're the job that's being restructured. I'm sensitive to that. But I also said there will be companies, and there have been in the past, that will spring up to supply the extra parts. There was a company called Warshawski that was for years the special place to get parts for old Model T Fords. Companies take the risk to buy the spare parts. Entrepreneurs take the risk to try and create new businesses as other businesses change out. There's a concept called active inertia, and there is a lot of active inertia in a corporate environment. Unless you can find a way to shake up your own company and be an entrepreneur within and use the resources, because every company is looking for someone with an entrepreneurial attitude, you need to help break down this active inertia where we're stuck in the modes of thinking and working that brought success in the past, whereas market leaders oftentimes just try to accelerate their tried and true activities. And the one reason I called the book Shaking the Globe is what worked in the past will not work in the future. Command and control, we know it's history, but how do you embrace this entrepreneurial thinking and innovation? And the pressure is to do it now, which is actually a huge opportunity. When you say, you know what, don't employ me. Let me be a supplier on the side. And then all of a sudden, instead of working for your own company and being beholden to one company, you can be beholden to 10, 5 to 10 customers. You've just increased your possibility of more independence and wealth if you have found a real niche to serve. It's not for everyone, Donna. I don't want to make it sound like everybody should quit their day job and become an entrepreneur.
No.
But it's very satisfying if you look at it and you have a lot more opportunities.
Well, let's take it from another side. An entrepreneur can be someone that's working for a company that has innovative ideas.
Exactly.
They don't have to be out running their own shop. Not everybody's going to want to do that. You've already pointed that out, and I think that's a good thing. But I think of a gentleman that worked for a major aircraft company. And this company, they would reward employees. They'd say, if you come up with an idea, you will get a bonus. And they had a structured layout for the bonus. This guy was an inventor. And he would work along and check different things out, and he'd be talking to people. He's just one of these easygoing guys. And then one day he'd come into the office. He said, "Hey, I've looked at something in our assembly line here. I think you could save maybe 2 cents a piece if you did this. And let me tell you why I think this is going to work." This guy saved the company millions of dollars.
Right.
He loved his bonuses. He didn't want to be the chief executive. And Fred was his name, and I just remember Fred, and he was just this easygoing guy, and he just loved to create things. He'd say, "I could do this." And then you look at different businesses that will say, "Just keep feeding me money, keep me going," all of these different businesses, and they're not tapping in to what you described as the human capital, that they have the very assets, those assets of brain power and observation that the executives sitting in the top seats that are out taking care of business on another level, they don't have a hope or a prayer of seeing.
Right. And shaking the globe really addresses a lot of open innovation opportunities. I mean, there are people in India, China, Brazil, Turkey, France who have brilliant ideas, and by going to these countries, they're used to dealing with entrepreneurs. They have a higher global ambition, as reported by one of the research reports called the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor. It's amazing what information is really measured now. But in the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor, there are people begging and wishing that they could be in the U.S. to bring their idea or their product or even produce it so that it's cost efficient and competitive. And if we don't do it, someone will come from another country and do it to us.
That's right. And that's the important thing. One of the greatest things about the United States has always been you have opportunity. You're going to have to work for it, but you have the opportunity. And it's up to the individual and or group of individuals to work together to see something growing. And maybe it goes defunct. Maybe what you have is outdone by someone else. Do you give up? No. Let's turn it around and see what else we can do. We talk about the mirage of open markets to buy. Man, I looked at that and I said, this is something waiting to go downhill. This is all fantasy here. We've got a lot of stuff going on, but it's not what it seems to be. Give us a little bit on that.
I'd be glad to. When I wrote about the mirage in Dubai, I was giving a speech there and talking to someone. And I said, I just read that you can now buy property. You can buy your own house here in Dubai. I think that's a real opening of the markets, because in the past everything was owned by the sheikh and he decided who worked here and who left and who could buy and who couldn't. And the professor with whom I was speaking said, well, you're right, we can buy our own house, but we can't sell it without the prince's approval.
Oh,
and
yuck.
I never would have thought to even ask that question, because we have the Western eyes of, well, if you buy something, of course you have the right to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the mirage, that it's not really a free market there. Furthermore, if you don't get along, or you, let's say you want to make some changes and you start kicking up some issues, this happened to, again, a couple of people at the university. They were told, you have a week left on your contract. You have to go back to your home country. Even though your kids are in school, you have to leave within a week. So you don't have the freedom that you do in a country like the U.S. or in some other countries in the world to really make a difference in the free market.
Blythe, your research, there's so much that's come into play, so many things that have evolved that you've been able to put in your book. The changes are occurring very fast. What would you say to the person, no matter where they are in the world, who's listening at this time? With all of the instability, you have Iceland
went bankrupt, yes.
Yeah, they went bankrupt. And you have, then that is a nation. They're bankrupt. I remember reading about the bankruptcy in these other countries in the early 1990s. The banks were really in bad shape. There's news about the English bank. There are people in Korea that are saying, well, it's all the U.S. is doing. We have got a real shakeup that's occurring here. I think it's healthy myself. I think it's long overdue. It's been under the carpet for far too long. Now things are burping and vomiting up, and we don't like it. Nobody likes that. But it's better to get it out in the open so we can clean the mess up, and let's get moving. What would you want to leave my audience with in the way of a message regarding what we can do now?
Well, I would give three suggestions. And you asked earlier, why did I write the book? Because I want people to grab the opportunity of working or getting themselves in position to deal with cultures outside the U.S. Don't put up walls and think protectionism is the answer, because it's definitely not, and I talk a little bit about that in the book. But my three suggestions for your listeners is, number one, don't do it alone. Seek help from other global citizens. I learned so much from the Council on Foreign Relations or groups that are available through a National Endowment for Democracy. So seek help from other global citizens. They'll even pay you to learn about the outside world and some of the democratic activists that are going on. Secondly, seek knowledge. You know, get some research. Read the book. Read other books. You know, if you're interested in languages, learn the language. And thirdly, seek competence. In other words, if you're competent at your job, start telling people about it before your job goes away. And one way to do it is to really expand your worldview outside your current boundaries.
Blythe McGarvey, do you have a website? We've only got about a minute here. Do you have a website we can...
I do. It's www.blythemcgarvey.com, B-L-Y-T-H-E-M-C-G-A-R-V-I-E. So thanks for asking for that.
You are more than welcome. Blythe McGarvey, this book is a must read. Shaking the Globe. Understand, this is a changing time we're going through. This isn't a bad time. It is change. When you can move with it and when you're willing to learn, you're going to ace it. This is Donna Siebel-Blythe. Thank you so much for being with me. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Join us at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival, February 13th through 16th at the LAX Hilton, 5711 West Century Boulevard, Los Angeles. We are bringing together cutting-edge speakers including David Icke, Sonia Hoquette, celebrity and musician David Carradine, Danyon Brinkley, George Norrie, Sean David Morton, Vashali, and many more. Visit www.consciouslifeexpo.com. or call the box office 800-367-5777 for discounted tickets. Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Pete Smith here with OrthoTemp Health Shoes. These funky-looking shoes, invented by a medical doctor, will make you feel better. Who has time to work out these days? Wear our sandals or clogs around the house, go shopping, wear them on the treadmill. You'll burn extra calories. You'll tone and trim the legs, thighs, lower abdomen, rear end, your love handle area. You'll simply feel better. Check them out on the web at orthotebb.net.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hello, Donna Sebo here, and our telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a call and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do exactly that. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. We're sorry that we had this interruption. There was a bit of a power bleep. So these things can happen. After all, it is technology. This is Donna Sebo. I want you to know for the next half hour, the telephone lines are going to be open. You'll be able to call in and chat with me if you so desire. Here are the telephone numbers. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, worldwide, the toll-free telephone number is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. So we do have those toll-free numbers available to you. Now, you are hearing the ads regarding the Conscious Life Expo. I want you to know that February 13th, 14th, and 15th, I will be there in a booth for all 3 days. I will be speaking on Friday evening at 7 o'clock. I also will have the opportunity to do many consultations while I'm there. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you are hearing this, just know that you're going to be able to interact with me there. Also, I wanted to let you know, for those of you in Western Washington, there are some very special events coming up. One is the Women's Show that's going to be coming up in March, and that's the last weekend in March, and I'm going to be appearing there. I'll be speaking as well as being involved in a booth and interacting with you, and we're going to have special drawings, all kinds of wonderful things going on there. And then also on the 25th of April, which is a Saturday, and I know this is months away, but I'm letting you know now, there is a very special class that I'm going to be doing regarding self-esteem, mind power, and intuition. So all of these things are coming up. I want you to know about it because if you have a time, put it on your calendar. The Saturday class would be from 10 until 4, and more information will be coming up about it. I also want to take this opportunity to thank those of you that are sending me the most wonderful, wonderful stories. I am getting animal stories. I'm getting all kinds of good things. So I want to say thank you. And when it's possible, I will be sharing information with you as I'm able to fit it into the format of the show. So again, if you want to give me a call, I know that we've had a little bit of glitch because of the power failure, but hey, we're back on, ready to go. Give me a call at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Credit theft, my goodness, it's something, hey, it's just a part of life. There's always going to be someone out there in the world that is looking for the opportunity to take advantage of you and to take advantage of what you do, whatever you have. And it's just a factor of life. I've never known any period in life where this didn't exist on one level or another. Well, there are some things you need to be aware of. And I got an email from Debbie. And she said, Donna, I got this from a friend of mine. Please do read it because it may help people to avoid ID theft or unauthorized use of credit cards. So, like I said, there's always somebody out there that thinks that it's better to cheat and to lie and to steal. So we have to be alert as consumers. Now, this happened at a gym, and these are 3 real stories. One, a person went to a local gym, put their belongings in a locker, and when he came out, he saw his locker open and said, I thought I locked everything up. And he looked in his wallet that was in the locker, found everything was in order, all the cards were in place. Well, it was a few weeks later, and his credit card bill came. He had a very unexpected bill of $14,000. Yes, you heard me right, $14,000. Well, what are you going to do? Of course, what does he do? He calls the credit card company, and he's just furious. He said, I didn't do any of this. And the customer service department said that there was no mistake in the system and asked him if his card has been stolen. He said, no, my card hasn't been stolen. Then he went over, got his wallet with a customer service representative on the line, pulled out the credit card, and he had not used the card, and it had been switched. There was an expired similar credit card from the same bank in his wallet. So the thief was prepared. He was looking for whatever he could find. He came equipped to replace that card. So he ended up with a real, real challenge because he had to be able to deal with this. And there were no calls made to verify the amount that had been swiped. And this was because only small amounts had been charged. So there were all of these charges on his credit card. So it's very important. Check your credit card statement. And whatever you do, don't leave your credit card around where anybody can get to it. It's very important. Now, this is another scenario. A man went into a restaurant, paid for his meal with his credit card. We all do that, right? When the bill came for his meal, he signed it. The waitress folded the receipt and passed the credit card along. Now, he said usually he would just take it and place it in his wallet or his pocket. But this time, for some reason, he actually took a look at the card. And when he saw the card that had been given back to him, it was the expired card of another person. So what does he do? He immediately calls the right waitress. You'd do the same thing. She took it back, apologized, and went back to the counter under the watchful eye of the customer. And all the waitress did while she was walking to the counter was wave the wrong expired card to the counter cashier, and the counter cashier immediately looked down and took out the real card. No exchange of words, nothing. She took it back to the man with an apology. So this is something that was going on. Someone was hoping that he would walk out of that restaurant and they'd have the card. This type of a scenario almost happened to my husband. He was in a restaurant. He got billed at a hotel that was adjacent to the restaurant and had to pay the bill. But we didn't pay the bill because we called in, and the credit card company said, give us the details and information. It was so odd. It was a place he had never, ever been to. It's really interesting. Now, so make sure the credit cards in your wallet are yours. Check the name on the card every time you sign for something and or when the card is taken away for even a short period of time. Most of us take our cards back without even looking at them. I've been guilty of that. I just assume it's mine. So make the habit of checking your credit card each time it's returned. Now, this is a third scenario, and this is scary. This customer went into a pizza restaurant to pick up an order they had called in. They paid by using their Visa check card, which was linked directly to their checking account. The young man behind the counter took this man's card, swiped it, then laid it on the counter as he waited for approval. Which is standard. That's what we all go through. While he waited, he picked up his cell phone and started dialing. Now, the man thought this was a bit unusual because it's the same kind of cell phone that he had, but nothing seemed unusual about this. And then he heard a click that sounded like his phone sounds when he takes a picture. He then gave back my card but kept the phone in his hand as if he was pressing buttons. But this man became curious. He said, I wonder what he's taking a picture of. And he said, it just didn't really dawn on me right away what was going on. The only thing he could take a picture of was his credit card. It finally clicked in his head. So he said, now he's paying close attention to what a person is doing. So he said, I watched this young man. He put the phone on the counter, leaving it open. 5 seconds later, I heard the chime that tells you a picture has been saved. And I'm standing right there, realizing that this young man has just taken a picture of my credit card. And he played it off well because he did not know that I had the same kind of phone that he did. If I didn't have the same kind of phone that he did, I wouldn't have even known what happened. He said immediately, as soon as I got out of that restaurant, I canceled the card. I was just minutes. I was out of there canceling the card. He said, you must be aware of your surroundings at all times. Whatever you're using, whenever you're using your credit card, take caution and don't be careless. Notice who's standing near you and what they're doing when you use your card. Be aware of phones because many have a camera on them these days. Who would have thought that? That would be the last thing in my mind. But this young man was taking pictures of his credit card. So these are things we have to pay attention to. When you go to use an ATM, be very, very careful. There's scams going on all the time. Don't take any chances. Check your accounts, check your statements, be aware of what's happening. You'll be very, very glad that you are. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you want to chat. I'd be glad to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. Remember, all I need is your first name or your initial. That's it. And then we also have a worldwide toll-free number, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, we've gone through 6 months of Australian astrology for 2009. Let's go through another 3 months. This is for the months of July, August, and September. Those of you in July, guess what animals the animal that the Australians represent that month with? It's the koala. Oh, just an adorable little creature. Well, you're that kind of person. You are somebody that people just really relate to. So if you're born in July, unless you feel threatened, then you're just one of these people that others just really like to interact with. And you have an amazing sense, intuitive and practical, for what people need, what they may want. And friends, well, you will have an abundance of them. Now, for this year of 2009, the Australian forecast is the year that you can increase your family's fortunes. Now, it's a good time to get rid of that debt, organize your finances. You know what? You're going to be able to really do well. So don't listen to all of this stuff about the financial mess. This is your year to really shine financially. You can do it. So take the time, make the effort, and you'll get it together. Let's go for those of you born in August. You're under the sign of the crocodile. This is a very, very special reptile, and it's millions of years old. You're a very, very significant figure in Aboriginal culture. It is the charmer of their zodiac positioning. You're proud, passionate, and dynamic. People are drawn to you because of your intensity. You have a way of motivating people, and you are a natural when it comes into anything like mediation, politics, management, even teaching. Now, you can expect a lot of good fortune in the year 2009. Also, if you ask for help, you're going to get it. And virtually everybody you meet is going to be eager to help you make your most dearest and biggest dream come true. You're going to find, when it comes to love, you're going to be meeting those people that will fulfill that part of your life. So just realize you have an opportunity to have partnerships in business and in personal life that are really going to enrich your life. Last but not least for this trio, September. Those born under the sign of September, you're a lizard. A lizard is a very adaptable creature. It's able to hide itself. It played an important role in Aboriginal stories as well. Those born under the sign give the impression of being aloof, but deep down they're very aware, sympathetic, and thoughtful. You're a detail-oriented perfectionist, which can bring your success as a manager, decorator, or in any other area of business and industry that kind of detail orientation is suitable. For this, the year 2009, it's a year where you lizards can get a lot accomplished because you can multitask from one project to the next, and you'll easily get done whatever you're going to put your mind to. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a moment, and we'll be back with more good things to share. And if you want to call in and chat with me, we're going to be able to do exactly that. 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, He's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Interested in UFOs, the paranormal, predictions, prophecies, and psychics? Then join us along with David Icke, Sean David Morton, Jim Mars, Richard Hoagland, Danyon Brinkley, Sonia Coquette, and many more at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo and Film Festival, February 13th to 16th at the LAX Hilton. Call the box office at 1-800-367-5777 or visit ConsciousLifeExpo.com for more information and discounted tickets.
This is Pete Smith for OrthoTeb Health Shoes. OrthoTebs are completely heelless, invented by a doctor, and you'll burn 3 times the calories of regular walking in our sandals, 2 times the calories of regular walking in our clogs. They help you tone and trim the entire leg, thighs, buns, lower abs, and love handle area. They offer symptom improvement for people with plantar fasciitis and low back pain. Check them out on the web at www.orthoteb.net.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I enjoy Cheryl. Oh, by the way, give me a buzz if you want to chat. 877-876-5227-888-815-9756. And that second number is worldwide. It always means a great deal to me when I come across stories about people who have decided they are going to take the initiative in their own lives to be able to make a difference for themselves, and then they're happy to share their information with other people. So frequently, it's easy to play the role of a victim. So easy is it to just say, oh, this is to blame for what's going on, this, that, or the other, rather than being self-motivated to move yourself forward the way you want to. Well, there's a woman, her name is Diana. When I came across her story, I thought, this is amazing, and I've got to share it with you. Diana, after 11 years of being cancer-free, breast cancer came back. Now, she was 45 years of age, and she just had all kinds of emotions that came up. Here she had been free of it for 11 years. She said, I've got to figure out something I can do. This is just terrible. This should not be happening. Now, she was a dietitian. Now, when she first was diagnosed with breast cancer, she was 34 years of age. She had 2 little boys, and she went through a mastectomy and chemotherapy. And here we are, 11 years later. This is another cancer, but it's really aggressive, which meant she was going to have, and it was in the other breast, she was going to have another mastectomy, more chemo, and she said, it's this horrible, sinking, awful fear that just takes you over when you're given this diagnosis. What was that fear? She was afraid she wasn't going to grow old with her husband. She said she was concerned she wasn't going to be able to see her grandchildren. She said, all right, I'm going to fight this, and I'm going to fight it with food. Now, she was a healthy eater. She really was. This is a woman that She knew about nutrition. This was her life. This is what she had just been so dedicated to. So she was really, really aware. So she started studying. She said, everything I eat, everything I put in my mouth has to help me survive. She talked with researchers about cancer-fighting foods. She even went so far as consulting a dietitian who was a cancer specialist. So she began crafting her anti-diet. Now, this is what she did. She got rid of all white breads and rice. Instead, she went for 3 to 6 servings of whole grains and a serving of 2 of beans each day to boost her daily fiber to more than twice the amount that the typical American diet has. And she said, fiber lowers estrogen in the body, helping to prevent breast cancer. So she aimed for 9 daily servings of fruits and vegetables because they were packed with phytochemicals shown to obliterate cancer. Now, she had to be creative about this because that was quite a shift. She said, breakfast was a whole wheat bagel and a grapefruit or a healthy shake made with blueberries, raspberries, and grapefruit. And that was 3 servings right there. So she said lunch became salads of tomatoes, carrots, and leafy greens, spinach or romaine, along with a cup of bean soup or a slice of 7-grain bread topped with hummus made of chickpeas. And dinner, she decided, could be a side of broccoli and squash, fiber-rich brown rice, and a grilled fish like salmon that contained omega-3 fats proven to fight breast cancer. Now, she said there were other simple proven cancer-fighting strategies, too. One was green tea, consuming only healthy fats like olive oil and nuts, even adding a tablespoon of ground flaxseed, which converts to an anti-estrogen in the body, to 1 meal a day. She cut out all alcohol, except every once in a while she'd have a glass of red wine, which also contains phytochemicals. And she incorporated what she describes as delicious, nutritious cancer fighters like shiitake mushrooms, artichoke, soy, and organic low-fat dairy products into her regimen. Now, her family loved it. They were having grilled tuna, you know, all kinds of things. And he said, her oncologist, when she went to the doctor, said, I don't know what you're doing, but I want you to keep it up. Now, there was a Detroit newspaper reporter who was interviewing Diana about how she had beaten cancer. And after she told her story, people started clamoring for her to tell more. Now, just about every one of us knows someone that has breast cancer. So Diana began putting together booklets and mailing them across the country. And then she spoke at a conference on fighting cancer. And doctors around the globe began prescribing her booklet as a must-read for newly diagnosed women. And letters started coming in to her. They said, you've helped me survive. Thank you. You've empowered me. Thank you for paving the way for all of us. Diana said she realized then, when she started getting these letters from women all over the country, that she had a purpose and she had beaten the cancer. Now, 13 years later, after the diagnosis, she is cancer-free. She said her dreams of finding a cure hasn't been realized, but she has been able to help other women battle this insidious situation with food. She said it's more than about healthy foods, it's about hope. She said, I want women to remember this. Every diet change is helpful, and it's never too late. You can beat breast cancer. So let me give you some information that Diana had used, because I just think it's just really good to know. Maybe you can share it with a friend. Now, this is what she did. For breakfast, she had her super shake. She had 1/3 cup of soft tofu. Some people can't handle tofu, so maybe you'd want to use something like goat's milk or whatever is best for you. 6 baby carrots, 3/4 cup of fruit, 1 tablespoon of wheat bran, 1 tablespoon of wheat germ, 1 tablespoon of ground flaxseed, 3/4 cup soy milk, and 3/4 cup of orange juice in a blender to make 1 serving. If you can't handle milk, just eliminate it. Use the juice. And I think you'll find that that can be very helpful for you. For lunch, you'd have 1.5 cups of vegetable soup, 1.5 to 1 cup of carbs, which is 1 to 2 slices of whole grain pasta or bread, cups or two to three slices. 2 to 3 ounces of lean protein, such as salmon, chicken, or eggs, and she'd use butter or olive oil sparingly, but she still would use it. Those are healthy fats. For dinner, she had 2 to 4 ounces of lean protein, at least 1 to 1.5 cups of vegetables and or fruit. She'd have 1/2 to 1 cup or 1 to 2 slices of carbs. And she used butter or olive oil sparingly. And she said for snacks, unlimited fruits and vegetables, small handful of nuts, 1/4 cup of hummus with veggies, or baked tortilla chips with salsa, yogurt with fruit. For dessert, she'd have 1 ounce/1 square of chocolate, 1 apple with 1 tablespoon of fat-free caramel dip, or 2 cups of low-fat popcorn. You can't go wrong. Healthy, no matter what. This is Donna Siebel. Thank you for being with me. We've got a great lineup of guests next week. You want to be in touch because we're going to tell you who they're going to be on Monday. Have a fabulous weekend. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There's no other light like the one you carry. Let it shine. Let people know that they can see you, see your actions, and know your truth. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.